join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. Welcome to an all new episode of Comedy Gold Mines, where we do what? You know what we do. Get inside the minds of brilliant comedians. And oh my God, today do we have a very complex mind to get into. An angry mind. A little complex, angry, fussy mind. That's what we got to get into today. But an amazing one. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Comedy Gold Mines, Wanda Sykes. Hey, Wanda.
Hey, Kevin.
How you doing?
All right, you. Hey, your baby in the back crying.
Yeah, it's a shit show in here. Okay, it's a walking
man,
shit show.
Four kids,
two dogs. It's too much.
I understand. I understand all about that.
Ain't enough house. I don't care where you go.
No,
it ain't enough house.
Never.
People think you can get big houses to get away from. House ain't gonna get you away from shit. They just go wherever you at.
Find you. Have you been home and taken a shit in private?
Never.
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 Little kids, I think when they get to about 8 or 9, that's when they realize, oh my God, you're shitting.
Yeah.
And they leave you alone. But before then, they just wander in and hey.
Well, Zoe, my youngest, his big thing is, what you doing, Dad? Whenever I'm in the bathroom. What you doing? What you doing, Dad?
What you doing?
Yeah. They know new words, new sentences. You know, it's a beautiful time. A beautiful time to be a father, and a beautiful time to simply understand your kids more. That's what this pandemic did. This pandemic made me really realize that my kids are assholes. This is it right here.
It's not your kids, Kevin. It's just kids.
Kids in general.
Yeah.
Kids in general.
Yeah.
Wanda, we get to talk today. Now, I know you, right?
Uh-huh.
This is an opportunity for...
You know I'm way past my bedtime. I would say way past my bedtime, but you just know it's kind of late on my
end. This is kind of late. Well,
but I'm doing it because I love you.
They say you go to bed at 5:30. What's your bedtime? They say.
I have my soup.
Yeah. They say Wanda go to bed at 5:30. That's what they say.
My soup. then they put me in front of the TV, throw my shawl on me. I watch the 6 o'clock news.
You watch an episode of MASH.
Me TV. It's all about Me TV. On the weekends, I get to stay up and watch an episode of Columbo.
Yeah, weekends you get crazy. On the weekends,
and I go to bed.
Oh, let's talk comedy, man. Let's talk comedy for a second, Wanda. An amazing comic you are, successful as hell. Have been, on top of your comedy game, for years now. In the beginning, I'm quite sure that it wasn't that way. I want to know why you chose comedy. What is it that got you into the world of stand-up comedy?
I think it's like for all of us, it's just a gift or talent that God gives you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to make sure you stink at everything else until you figure out what you're supposed to be doing, right? you're miserable at everything else. I mean, I was like funny all through school, high school, college. And then, you know, I graduated from college and I lived in Maryland, DC area. So you end up working for the government, which I did. And I was quite successful working at NSA, but I was just miserable. And it was, I just knew it was something else that I should be doing, that I was wasting my time.
How'd you check into the humor box? Like that's quite the transition to go from a government job to stand up. So was it one of the things of just being the funny person around people for so long and everybody's just giving you the nod of what that is?
Right. Everyone's saying, hey, you're funny. Oh my God, you're so funny. You need to be doing something. And I would speak in jokes. You have some friends who are just funny. They're just just conversational. They're just funny. But they were jokes, I guess. Yeah. I guess how I would communicate. And yeah, and it just was like, I you know, watching comedy and growing up watching comedy and stand up and how much I loved it. And yeah, I just said, man, I this is probably something that I need to be doing. I need to explore. But I've never been to a comedy club, didn't know where the comedy clubs were or anything. But like I said, when it's a gift and it's you know, what your purpose, you figure it out. And you know,
the crazy thing is, you know, I can't even remember how I found the comedy club in the beginning days, right? Because you don't know where comedy clubs are. You're not in the circuit. You have no idea where to go to start in the craft. And then when you figure it out and you find it, it's amazing how this portal kind of opens up. And right. You realize that there's almost just an underground world that you would have never knew. You would have never knew about. And once you get in this world, it's like, holy shit, it's exciting. It's a rush. It's full of people that frequent it. Like, you know, I remember when I grabbed the understanding, I was like, well, how are these people coming to amateur night? Like, what is their reason
for coming
to amateur night? Like, whose day is built around the joy of a 7 p.m. amateur night show? And I talked to the club owner. He was like, people love to laugh. And sometimes it's not about who's given the laugh. It's just the opportunity to laugh. He said, that's how comedy clubs make money. We make money because people love to laugh. And when I got in that field and I started to understand that there will always be a crowd. There would always be somebody there. There would always be somebody in need of an outlet, you know, in the form of that, ha-ha. And I was like, fuck, like, this is it.
Right.
This is the thing. So when you say you figure it out, I know that to be true because, you know, it was one of those things where it just kept making more sense as you did it more. The beginning days, of course, were rough. You know, they're rough for any comic. When was it that you knew that you were an actual comic?
Ooh.
When were you out of the hacky stage of it? You know, the early stage. And when did you transition to say, okay, now I got it. Now I am who I'm supposed to be on stage.
Wow.
I'm myself.
Wow. That's a great question. I guess, you know, it took a long time because I think, like you said, we all do our impersonation of a stand-up comic when we first start out, before we find your voice and what some people they're just born with it. They just start off with who they are. Yeah, it took me a while. I always wrote great jokes. But it took a while for me to like put myself into it, to personalize the jokes and reveal something about myself. And I think it was my first half hour special. My first half hour. That was that Comedy Central Presents. I was working on the Chris Rock show as a writer and going through a divorce. And I think when I got that divorce, it was like going through that, it was just like, not just an awakening, but also liberating a little bit. You know, like, oh, I can stop doing this shit. I can stop, stop telling these bullshit jokes. Yeah. Oh, my husband this, my husband that. Jesus, what was that about? You know? I put these.
That is amazing.
There it is.
It's amazing. Yeah, I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Yes, and shit got better. Shit got better. It got real. We share a friend. We share a mentor in Keith Robinson. And I remember one of the biggest and best things Keith ever said to me was in the younger days. He was like, "Stupid, you just went on stage and got a bunch of laughs." And the one thing that I'm thinking about is I don't know who you are. He said, who are you, stupid?
Yeah.
Nobody knows. You got a bunch of laughs talking about a bunch of nothing. But who are you?
Yeah, like anyone could take those jokes and do them and kill with them. But you got a handful of jokes.
That's it. That's what he did. Slow clapping. Good, 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 Good. You're proud of yourself. You got some laughs. You went up there and talked about the ukiyu and ikiyi. Puppy. Did you get some laughs, stupid? He said, nobody knows who you are.
Yeah.
Nobody walking out of here is going to say, good set, Kevin Hart. They don't even fucking know. He said, tell jokes about you. Make people know who you are. And I think, you know, when he was giving me just those conversations, that crash course of understanding, it really put me in a mindset, I think, to become a comic, to become, you know, a better version of a comedian.
Right.
For you, I mean, look, you just talked about the days where you were at the Chris Rock Show and you were writing, right?
Yeah.
How did you find yourself there?
I found myself there because I opened for Chris when he was working on Bring the Pain. He was touring with that, and he was at Caroline's on Broadway. And Louis Ferranda booked me to open for him. And he was just going in just to tune up before he shot the special. And I was just like, damn. You know, I'd met Chris before, and no, he's Chris Rock. But I was like, damn, this right here is going to change the game. I was like, this dude, this right here is taking comedy. So this is raising the bar. And, you know, he was like, you're funny, man. You know, like, yeah, you're funny, man. You're funny. I'm like, all right. So Bring Your Pain comes out. Boom. Kills, destroys everything. Then he got his show. I was like, wow, Chris is getting a show on HBO. I think this is Chris's story to tell, but eventually the show got picked up, pilot got picked up, and he sees me at the club. He's like, oh my God, I'm so glad my pilot got picked up. I want you to write on the show. They're gonna reach out to you. I want you to write on the show. I'm like, okay. He's like, he's like, you had three names. Somebody else had three names. And I told the guy, hey, hire the person with three names. Oh. Anyway, I want you to write on the show. I was like, all right. So I got a call from Melanie Roy. And she's like, can you send some writing samples? And I did. And, I submitted that, and I got the gig, and
How did you know what a writing sample was at the time? Were you polished in the world of writing? Like, did you have some writing jobs prior? No. Did you ask? Like, what do you mean when you say samples? What do y'all want? And
she just said, like, monologue. She said, write some monologue jokes, write some, sketch ideas or whatever. And I'm like, all right, okay. And yeah, I submitted that. I don't remember if she showed me the pilot. They may have sent me the pilot. I'm not sure.
Either way, that's strong to not have the experience in that space and somebody just, all right, hey, just send me, write this up for me and send it in and then we'll go off of that. You go, all right. And you it's like the shaky all right. It's when I went in for a sketch comedy show audition. They was like, do you have characters? And I was like, yep. I didn't have a fucking character at all. I didn't even know what a character was. Well, they said, you got some? Sure do.
Right.
Yeah.
Hell right, yeah. I got a hat.
Yeah.
I got a hat. And I got some glasses.
Yeah. Where do you see glasses, man? What do I do, glasses man, for you? He's good.
I got glasses man.
Yeah, that's it. That was a fucking.
I got this guy. I got the guy who snaps the fingers and points.
Yeah, that's one of my best ones.
I love that
guy. Snap man is good.
Snap man.
Yeah, you don't like Snap man. So you go, Chris Rock show becomes a success. Chris in general right now is moving. Your relationship with Chris, how does this thing grow?
Oh, I love that dude. I adore that guy. He's just super funny. I keep telling him, I was like, man, you're Chris fucking Rock. You know, I want him to be more annoying like you.
And the sad part is, I know what you mean.
You understand what I'm saying. Exactly what you understand? Like, yeah. Yes. like own who yes. you are, man. But Chris is so like, hey, man, I'm you know, it's all good, man. So reserved, so like, you know, doesn't rest on his laurels. He's like, just hey, man, I'm, you know.
Chris explains why he's living his life, and I'm like, Chris, like he's like, yeah, man, I'm thinking about just taking some time to myself, and you know, just kind of going and just doing some stuff for me. I'm thinking about, you know, it's just I might get
my hair cut today. Like, Chris, no, I don't.
Just get your fucking hair cut, Chris. Just go on the trip.
Something better, dude.
Get the barber to come to you. Nah, I don't want to trouble nobody.
Hey, I'm gonna go in there. You know, there's a. Chris, what you doing out here? There's like three people in front of me getting their hair cut.
Yeah,
like,
I'm just gonna sit in here.
I'm gonna read some old Jets. I'm gonna read some.
He's extremely humble, man. He's a humble guy that has not let the success get to his head at all. And I think, you know, he's always approached life from that standpoint. But I know how you speak of Chris, and I know how he speaks to you. And, you know, in comedy, I feel like we're nothing without our relationships.
Oh, absolutely.
We're nothing without our relationships. And that's just an amazing way.
Yeah, I mean, and any, like, if a career-wise, if it was something I've done that. I've like, called him, hey, man, let me run this by you, you know? He's just that. Guy, he's that guy. I mean, like, for me, he's just such a goat, you know.
Goat. There's
goat.
Nothing there's no debate or argument behind that.
Bring the pain, just change the game of comedy, you know. It's like Richard, George Carlin, like even Eddie left, you know, they're like, hey, here you go, this is where we at. And Chris said, okay. Like, because we were, I mean, I don't know, the state of comedy at the time was the, especially, you know, Def Jam and all, which was huge, and which I love, put us into a area where, I don't know, it was like, you know, bawdy and big laughs and all. But Bring the Pain took us back to more like, hey, as a people, this is where we are right now.
Grounded reality.
Yes.
That's exactly what it was.
Yes.
Ground reality.
Absolutely. And it was like, hey, come on, man, this is what we're supposed to be doing comedy wise. And it definitely elevated my game. And it definitely was like, oh, that's okay. That's what we're doing.
When you talk about your game, Nawanda, I don't think there's ever been a time where I've had a conversation about Wanda Sykes and polished has not come up. You've always been a polished and prepared comic. You've always done the work. Like, you know, before you get to a point of, all right, I'm now going out and I'm doing shows or whatever, like you do the work, and that pen to the pad has been present. It's just been present in your career since I've known you. And that's the biggest piece of respect that I have for you. It's like, you know, you never just came off as a person that was looking for the easy laugh. I'm here to get the easy thing. Like you've always been a person that says, I understand how not just to be funny, but how to look for things within my world of funny that people may not be able to get to. My point of view is unique and different. That's what I'm going to be special in. And you don't have a lot of comics that do that, right? So now you're still doing it, but you're still like elevating. It seems like you're getting better. Your last special, I looked at it and I'm like, this motherfucker getting better. She's still getting better. So
thanks, man.
Is your love for comedy greater today than it was yesterday? Do you feel like you're more in love with it? Or are you, you know, is it at a point where are you falling back a little bit? Where's your mind at when it comes to comedy?
You know what, Kev? I don't even know if it's the love for it, or it's I don't want to say fear or respect, or I guess it's like, I don't want to say it's not fear, but I guess it is. Maybe it is. It's fear of not hitting that mark, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And stand up is still the most challenging thing I do. It still gives me the most anxiety. To go back to what you said, at the comedy club, the guys, people show up here to laugh,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think when I hit that stage, I know people want to laugh, but I just feel like they expect the laughs. They don't want cheap laughs from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like, oh boy, they're going to be like, okay, she's phoning it in, you know? So I guess it's just pressure. I just put so much pressure on myself to meet that mark, because it's not just the audience, but it's you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I want y'all to, you know, you look at my special, be like, damn, okay. That's what mm-hmm. she's doing right now. You want the respect of your peers, you know? But mainly I know my audience and I know who rolls with me, and I want to make them laugh, but it has to be at a certain level. Cause like you say, you get Keith Robinson back there going, Jesus, oh Wanda, God. What? Good Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, I got titties. Yeah. Woo. Yeah, it's just
Dummy. That's a great
that
set, dummy. You feel good about that set there?
That was good. I wanted to. Yeah, that was great. That was really nice.
I just saw him too. I was just in New York. I saw Keith. He came to the cell. I went and worked out a little bit.
And oh, cool.
He's Keith. He's like, yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, getting on stage. I'm just working on my speech. That's all I'm doing, is just working on my speech so I can get more clear. And I said, shut up, Keith. Nobody wants to hear about you and your problems of life after stroke. Okay, either you're gonna do it or not. Nobody, I'm not raising money for you.
I booked some dates and we're going out. I gotta tell him, let's go.
I love it.
So that's my guy, I gotta tell him, let's go.
There is no better person on the face of this earth than Keith Robinson. Here's another question that I have for you, right? We're talking about the world of stand-up. We're talking about you, your longevity, your approach to the craft, your now fear and anxiety that you have attached to it. Today, I mean, look, the climate is changing, right? The conversation around comedy is changing. And, you know, it seems to be almost as if, you know, stand-up comedy is like merging into the world of politics to some degree, right? I remember there was a time.
Oh, come on. Comedy's always been in politics. Comedy has always been part of politics.
Now it's more. Now it's like, you don't think it's more now?
Kevin, okay, when you say politics, I'll let you finish. I'll let you finish.
Here's what I mean when I say that, okay? When I say politics, right? In other words, politics and politics, there's two different sides,
uh-huh.
right? And in politics, there's a world of division.
Uh-huh.
And because of the divide, well, there's more of a conflict of interest and a debate attached, right? Whereas...
Say what you're trying to say, man. Because it's...
Well,
cause
I'm saying...
But it's very...
I'm
no.
very good. I'm very no, good not. At talking. I'm very good no, at just talking
not right
and
now.
Getting there.
Not right
okay,
now.
Well, you can't bully me. And
That's
and
what let, I do, let me, Kev.
Well, that is true. That is what you do. Okay. What I'm saying is, like, now within comedy, you have the conversation attached to the tone of jokes and some people's approval and some people's disapproval. So where I say politics, I'm just talking about the split of contrast in what I like versus what I don't like. When there was a time where if you didn't like a comic, you just didn't watch a comic or you didn't support a comic. So what I'm asking you is, in today's state, where you see so many people's opinion on a comic or on a comic's jokes or on a comic's approach to what he does, it's like we forgot the thing of, well, you don't have to watch him or you don't have to support him. And you find out that this conversation is growing because of what? A political, like, approach. It's like, it's almost as if it's politics to me now. You don't understand what I'm saying?
No, I understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying is bullshit, but I understand what you're saying.
Why? You don't get it?
What? I don't get it. It's very basic. I believe mm-hmm. everyone has a right to say whatever they want to say. It's called mm-hmm. freedom of speech. Comic can do a joke they want to say, right?
Yes.
But people also have a right to say, eh, didn't like that.
Yes.
So when people say, eh, didn't like that, then comics can't go back and go, you don't have a right to say you don't like it.
Very true.
Right to say you don't like it. Because now I'm going, oh my God, fucking idiots. What are y'all? Everyone has a right. If you have a right to say it, then people have a right to say they don't like it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I don't understand. What are you talking about as far as like?
I'm talking about the day of, if I don't like it, or if I don't like you,
mm-hmm.
well, I don't buy a ticket, or I don't watch the show.
Then that's fine. And that's it.
That's how, that should be it. But today it seems as if there's a different driving factor of, if I don't like it.
No.
You don't feel that way. You don't feel like the world of negative is spread by the point of view of the negative?
Well, you feel it now because you have more platforms for people to put out there and type their little things and say whether they like it or don't like it. But as long as people show up and they buy a ticket and they keep saying, hey, I want to see this guy, that's it, then, or this woman or whatever, then that's how it works. Like, this whole idea of cancel culture, it's made up. It's like somebody gave it a title, but it's always been around. It's always existed. It's always been here. I mean, you know, it's like somebody will say something or somebody will do something, and then the audience has a right to say whether or not they like it or not. And that's it. And if the audience likes it, if there's enough audience who still wants to see it and still show up, they will continue to support that person. That person will continue to sell tickets and continue on with their career. I mean, it's so made up. It's made up. Don't buy into that. Only person that could cancel me is God.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's it. If God said, oh boy, Wanda, that's enough.
That's it.
Yeah, I guess I'm done.
That's it. Well, the big fella himself just right. pulled the yep. plug on me.
Yeah, I guess it's a wrap. Oh boy. Where's my shawl and my suit?
I too feel the same way.
Yeah. There's too many outlets to get it directly to your viewers, to your audience. I mean, Trump proved that. All the shit he said, you know, grab him by the pussy. How could you think you become president? Hey, president. To me, that's the biggest evidence of letting you know there's no such thing as cancel culture. Stop it. Just stop
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's convenient when it needs to be.
And thank
it's convenient
you.
When it needs to be.
Thank you. Yes. If you yes. fuck up and people go, ooh, that was too much.
Yeah.
Then, you know, yeah, R. Yeah. Kelly probably should have been canceled when he married Aaliyah. And R. Kelly knew it. And R. Kelly was like, ooh, boy, I better make some bops. He went back and made better music. He was like, let me get these niggas step in the name of love. Yeah.
Every time the heat got hot, he put out a hit. If you really look at it, it was strategic in his approach. Every time the heat got hot,
he peed on little yeah. girls. But man, woof!
But did you hear? You hear Chocolate City? Did you hear Sex Made? Jesus Christ, man, he's doing it right. That man's doing it right. We going to the club tonight. Yeah,
that's a it's a bop.
He definitely played the game. So then you are happy. You're happy with the state of comedy. You don't feel like there is any world of change in stand-up comedy.
Oh wow. I'm excited about the world of stand-up comedy. Because I see so many comedians out there, especially from marginalized groups. I see more voices out there. I hear more comics landing shows and getting half hour, you know, hours and stuff. And I'm excited about it. It's so many funny comics out there. And I'm telling you, here's the bottom line. Comics and everybody who's hung up on this, oh, you can't say this, can't say that. Oh, you're old. You're old in your thoughts. You're old because this young generation, they get it. So
I think they do get it. And listen, mm-hmm. within time comes change. All right. We have to understand.
Dude, there used to be public hangings in this country.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers would pack picnics and sit out on the grass and watch a hanging.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about slavery and I'm talking about just a it thing. Was just the
yeah
a thing. And then somebody was like, this don't feel right. My potato salad just not sitting right with me.
It spoke up.
Watching this.
I don't think I want to watch this no more.
It's not cool anymore, more man.
Watching people die like this and bringing the kids out here. I don't think this is what it's supposed to be.
Right. I should be playing frisbee.
somebody spoke up. We out here playing badminton in the middle of a hang. This ain't it. Okay, we gotta adjust.
Yeah.
And I think within the world of adjusting, the good thing is this: where I'm at is the spotlight on respect.
There you go.
That's the thing that I definitely will side with, and say that I clearly understand. It's like, you know. We're talking about respecting one another. We're talking about understanding that different people have different lives, and within those lives, it's about respect. And ultimately, the impact that voices and words have,
absolutely.
We've been ignorant to it for quite some time, right? You've been oblivious to the real damage of certain slander, certain phrases, certain things. And because of your obliviousness, you know, without the education, without the understanding, without somebody telling you, here's what this is doing, you don't know. So there's been a large part of time where some people really just didn't know. And I think within the last couple of years, you know, these last 3 years, 4 years, there's been a real spotlight on educating one another. And I think just to get to the overall solution, as we get educated more, well, you show that you learn something by making the necessary adjustments. And the spotlight on comics and, you know, our tone, it was brightened because this is the most expressive art. And, you know, now with social media, you know, what you say, it gets spread in like 2 seconds. So the wrong messaging and the wrong thing from that brief spot in your set or brief, whether it's the beginning, middle, end, whatever. If it's taken, it's something that's deemed as wrong, well, now that's felt immediately. And for me in stand-up, I think the biggest change is just making sure that I'm aware, right? And making sure that I'm not in the place of stupid anymore, right? Like for the laugh. Like I don't want to operate in the place of dumb for the laugh. Let me make sure that I'm conscious within my approach to the craft now. That's my biggest change. Mm. And I'll say rightfully so. Yeah.
For you.
Me, that's my biggest change.
My thing is, and it goes back to what we were talking about, is like when you get on stage, you want to tell people where you like. My favorite kind of comedy is when you're talking about, I learned a little bit more about you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want you to know a little bit more about me, where I'm coming from, how I think. So I think it's just mindful for that, being mindful of that, you know. And words have consequences,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I like for my comedy to be a voice for the people who maybe, you know, who don't have a voice. I speak up for my people, all my people. I belong to so mm-hmm. many different groups. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So it's like I be a voice for my people. And, you know, and is there a line in comedy? No, that's not a line, but just know that there's consequences. There's always consequences. And, you know, if I go on Ellen, my next time on Ellen, I go out there in blackface and be like, hey, yeah. Miss Ellen. Hey, what are we talking about? I thought it was no line.
Yeah.
Now there's a line? Oh, okay. Cause this is fucking with y'all. So now it's a line. Can't play like that. Yeah. Can't play like that.
What is next for Wanda Sykes? What are you working on?
Season 2 of the Upshaw. So that's taking up majority of my time right now. Very excited about that.
Are you having a blast?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely.
It's a good cast.
Yeah, we're writing. Yeah. So, but we haven't started shooting, but you know, we're writing right now. So I'm in the room and I'm in that room. Also in History of the World, Part 2. Okay. Hulu, we're doing that, Mel Brooks. And so I'm in that room. So it's like my day is bouncing Swamped. Back and back from that. And then Push It Productions, we got a lot of, you know, projects going on. We just set something up over at ABC. And we got another thing we're doing with Netflix. So,
Are you loving the world of producing?
I love it. I'm sure you know. I mean,
it's the best.
But I got to figure out how, you know, right now it's just myself and Paige Hurwitz. We're doing all the work, but we got to get some staff around us because I know, man.
You have to.
I was looking at that retreat you did. What? I'm like, you know that's, not that's about... the thing. You got a great group with you, but to me, that's what I love about producing is just to go, damn, we had an idea, we put it together, we sold it, now we get to hire a bunch of people. Hiring folks, that's like, it just changes lives, right? Yeah. You love that. And you watch them grow, you watch them move up and all that. Yeah. That's the move, yep.
You're giving people the opportunity. And I think, you know, when you're talking about production and right now it's you and your partner, you know, that one person that you bring in that acts as a creative exec or
that's what we need next.
You know what I mean? Or that person, that's all they can do is just start to put this org chart together. And, you know, what you can do in these beginning stages is not really commit to just one place, but if you do something like a three show deal or you know, maybe like a two picture deal, something like that, you mm-hmm. get them to apply money mm-hmm. to your overhead. Yeah. And you take that money and that's what you go hire, you know, absolutely. that exec with. But it only takes one or two in the beginning just to give you guys a nice system. Yeah. But you'll find that you start churning out stuff more.
But you know what? To us, it's just more of the finding that development exec. You know, it's mm-hmm. like we've you know, had overalls and not for overalls, first looks and first look deals and stuff and brought people on. But just didn't kind of work out. So it's you just got to find that right person. You
find the right person.
You got to find the right person.
And right now, I mean, listen, the town, there's so much going on because there's so many different outlets for content, for IP, mm-hmm. and everybody. Mm-hmm. Like what I found, what made it easier for me is in that corporate structure, that corporate ladder, it takes so long for people to progress. So in that space, if you find the good talent that's locked up in that ladder somewhere and they don't have the opportunity to get to the top and they're looking at eight years, 10 years before they can, right. Or you're like, hey, look, this is a great opportunity to get in on the ground floor
right.
with a production company that you know is going to work, you know we're going You know, produce TV shows and create other verticals, you can get in here and have more of a creative role, more of an impactful role, and be higher on the chain, and you're almost fast tracking. So, you know, those were the conversations that I had that allowed me to kind of bring some high level talent in. But I'm in love with it, Wanda. I'm starting to love it more than the idea of the star. I like the business more than I like the fame and the star. Like the business is evergreen. The business puts us in a place to keep money coming in the mailbox, right? Like with or without you.
But you are killing. How many hours do you sleep a night? Seriously.
I got this mattress called 8 Sleep so I can track it because my wife jumped in my ass real bad and she was like, you don't sleep, you need to figure it out. And I was like, I feel like I get enough sleep. So we bought this mattress and it tracks your sleep, how much you sleep for the week. I probably sleep 4 to 5 hours a day. Wow. And I was told that at 42, that's not good. You need at least 6 to 8. They were saying 6 to 8 minimum. So I'm below what you need, but I'm the early morning riser because my day starts at like 9. So I get up at like 5 so I can work out and do all that stuff. And coming home, regardless of the time, you know, I got teenagers. So the teenagers want to chill. They want to watch TV or watch a movie. And, you know, that normally takes you to like that 9 p.m., 9:30 time. So I try to get into bed. I try to get into bed by like 10:30, but then you end up just watching something stupid. You know, God forbid Martin's on. I end up watching episodes of Martin like I've never seen them before, and I'm locked in.
Ooh, Karate Man.
Yeah. I'm locked in. Oh, you got to be kidding me. This is the Dragonfly Jones episode. I watched the whole damn thing. So I ain't in actual sleep till 12. But this mattress is dope, though, because it tells you when you're in a deep sleep and when you're like light sleeping. And what I have a problem with is deep sleep. So I can sleep. Okay. But if I hear a crack, if I hear anything, I'm up. Yo!
I hear you, man.
Yeah, that's my problem.
That's me.
That's my problem.
That's me. Can't.
But it's I think as I'm removing myself more to Wanda, I'm letting the people around me be stars. I'm letting these people like navigate in these corporate waters and, you know, delegating, yes, but not micromanaging, right? So I'm taking more off my plate so that I can kind of sit back a little bit.
Well, I you know, as much as it pains me, because you know how I love to bully you and call you dummy. That's like my joy. That's my joy. But you're killing it, man. Very proud of you.
I love you, and I am more than proud of you. I love everything about you. I love what you stand for. I love that you're unapologetically you, and that's never going to change, right? You, like you said, you ride for your people, and a lot of people you do have. But the beauty of Wanda Sykes is that she's Wanda Sykes. And there's never another version of this person. It's as beautiful and bright as day. And for me, you have acted as a light. You have acted as a person that has educated me on things that I would have never been educated on because I'm a little dummy. And little dummy can float in the space of stupidity and not know it. So without relationships, as I spoke on earlier, as comics were nothing, and I can say you are one of my best. This is one of the best relationships that I have. And that circle of you, Chris, Keith, I mean, you know, you just talk about the minds in that circle. You just talk about, you know, the joke that Chris and I have is we ain't crazy.
Right.
And he said, hey, man, he said, as you don't do it, I ain't gonna do it. He said, and if you feel like you gonna do it, just tell me, because then I gotta tell the other people so we can call you together and go, what the fuck are you doing? As long as we don't go crazy. He said, that's the gift. The gift is just being grounded and real. And
yeah,
look at our little clique of of comic success. And you know the guys and the women I'm talking about, it works for a reason. You know, we work for a reason, and the success is attached to it for a reason. And there is no shock that you are who you are and where you are. It's well deserved. You're always going to fucking work. You're always going to do whatever it is you want to do because you got anxiety and you fucking scared of yourself. Okay.
Okay. You're right.
All right. All ladies and gentlemen, this is Comedy Gold Mines. And you know what we do here? We get inside the minds of amazing comedians. And today, with an amazing mind, we got into Wanda Sykes. As you heard her say, Upshaw's, they're working on another season. Make sure you catch it out. Show on Netflix starring Wanda, Mike Epps, Kim Fields. Who else? X is the leads there, Wanda.
Oh, it's Paige Kennedy, Jamel Simmons, Kylie. Spraggins, Diamond, Journey. It's
a shitload. Either way, season one is on Netflix now. Season two coming soon. I promise you that. Wanda, we will talk soon.
Yes,
this is exactly what I thought it would be. It's dope. Dope, and you are dope. All right? I love you.
Love you, man.
All right, bye.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.